Well, we heard from Stephen Kossoff earlier just how important solving the youth unemployment crisis is to our future and whether or not we can transition from the Championship to the Premier League of Nations. But the ticking time bomb in the numbers continues to be youth unemployment. Now, our unemployment rate is high for both youth and adults. However, the unemployment rate amongst young people, that's aged between 15 and 34, was 38.2%, implying that more than one in every three young South Africans in the labour force didn't have a job in the first quarter of this year. How are we going to overcome this Herculean task? Well, hopefully with more people like tonight's guests on the panel who see this as a challenge, certainly, but also as a huge opportunity. And my first guest is Tashmer Ismail, CEO of YES, the Youth Employment Service, which is a joint initiative between business and government that aims to address the youth unemployment challenge by creating 1 million so-called work experiences in the country. Evening, Tashmer.
Thank you.
And she's joined by Anesh Shivdasani, CEO of Giraffe, which is a fully automated digital recruitment solution that enables businesses to hire high volumes of medium-skilled workers much faster and far more affordably than any other recruitment method that we currently know. Anesh, great to have you back on the show.
Thanks very much, Michael. Great to be here.
And on the line, we've got Lebo Nke, executive at Harambee, a very well-known independent NGO that works with government, that works with businesses and international donors, as well as industry, to help solve youth unemployment. Lebo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Tashmer, there's no two ways about it. This is a crisis. It has been for some time. What are the fundamental reasons for this? Considering how much the government spends on education, we know the problem with basic education is well documented. We're at the bottom of the league rankings, according to the World Economic Forum. Our maths and sciences are abysmal. Is it a skills mismatch? Is it an economy not creating the work opportunities? What is it about South Africa that makes our youth unemployment crisis a world leader?
We have a dual economy. And if you look at the PDF of the World Bank, it has one on every country. It starts off by saying South Africa has a dual economy. So we have this first world economy, our financial services. If you look at the WEF rankings on some of those financial indicators, we're in the top three globally. And this does incredibly well. We have world-class innovations. But when it grows through clever algorithms. It grows through efficiencies. It doesn't grow with headcount. So the part of the economy that is doing well and functional is leaving behind that percentage of the population that are not making it through the school system with the tools they need to get bridged into economic participation. I repeat this number quite often because I think South Africans may not know it well enough, is that of the million youth that enter the labor force each year, close to 56% of them don't have a matric certificate. Now, what this means is there's no currency to prove to the world that you can be hired. They are seen as an incredibly high-risk hire without that certificate. And then we have those people that make it through matric, but don't have a great matric that allows them to enter the tertiary education system. The TVETs, the CETAs, and university, which suck up close to 77 billion of the fiscus. So the pathways that exist are not there for a large bulk of youth who are sitting without the certification that de-risks them. And then, of course, there's the apartheid spatial planning, which means that many youth in this unemployed bracket are physically distant from where the few jobs that exist might be.
So you point to a few structural barriers that the South African economy throws up. Lebo, I'd like to bring you in here because what Harambee has been doing, and quite successfully over the last while, is assessing and identifying youth that might not come with that currency of a matric certificate, but through the techniques and methods that you've developed, you can at least assess their workplace readiness. Just give me a little bit more background as to how Harambee does this and the sort of success that you've achieved through this approach.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I think that what we've seen at Harambee is that there's very little correlation between schooling and how ready people are for the world of work. And we have now seen about over 400,000 young people who've come in for work seeker support. And what we do with them on this day is basically give them some tips and hints on how to go about and find their own work. But then we also go through some assessments with us. The two that we have conducted before around like a learning potential, so basically trying to understand someone's learning potential without actually taking in their schooling experience. So it's fluid intelligence, looking at the ability to solve problems that you haven't seen before. And, you know, the correlation is really interesting, and I think it just talks to how so many young people are left out and, you know, who have actually real potential. We also look at, like, context and how someone would actually be able to perform in a very specific type of cultural environment. So you'd appreciate that a young person who will be great in a contact center may not necessarily be correct for a front of house job in a restaurant. So I think this idea of matching, so of understanding what young people's qualities and characteristics are, and being able to match them to jobs without actually using qualifications as a way of filtering is a big innovation and that we've sort of seen in this space. So we've done quite a lot of that. I think that, you know, Kesh spoke about education and geography. I think this issue of networks is also quite a big barrier. And very few jobs in South Africa actually advertised, especially at that entry-level positions where youth would be able to go into. Mm. And it is how people basically can tend to find jobs, is whether people that you've gone to school with or people in your household or people in your community. And I think in many ways, Harambee serves to be sort of like that network that connects them to jobs. Mm. And for some who are ready for those or who do mesh those jobs, some of them do need some work readiness that allows them to succeed in the workplace. So I think we've been really thinking hard about, like, what different lenses do we use to try and see young people's potential, and how do we just give them that, like, you know, the thin slice of intervention that can get them to not only get the job, but keep the job that they're going into.
To keep the job, because I think a lot of the research does indicate that once a young person does get that first job and at least remains employed for a period of 12 months, I think it is, they tend to remain quite sticky in the labour market.
Yeah, absolutely. And it talks to also these issues of network, because now once you've been in, you've got other people that you've learned more, so your experience goes up, you make more connections. That's how people find jobs, like people who they've worked with before. So I think there are many reasons that is true.
Anish, how are you using the innovations that you're bringing to the market with Giraffe to solve the unemployment issues in the country? Perhaps your focus is slightly different because you're coming at this from the medium sort of skilled level and not the entry worker or the entry level worker. But how are you approaching this?
Yeah, I mean, look, medium skilled could also include entry level people too. Like, so a call center agent, you can be a first time job seeker, join a call center, you're an entry level role, but that's still a medium skilled job, right? So whereas Lebo and Tash are really focusing heavily on remedying the supply side of the problem, we're focusing on the access issue, right? So if you think about unemployment, you break it down into its root causes. You've got supply side issues, primarily skills related, demand side issues, primarily related to economic growth and the structure of the markets and so on and so forth. And then in between them, you've got the access issue. How do we match supply and demand? And as Tash noted, you know, because of the, you know, legacy of apartheid, when we look at this medium-skilled type segment, people who could typically earn between, say, 3 and 15,000 rands a month, which is what Giraffe focuses on, those people typically live in townships, very far from business areas. They rely on public transport, which, let's be honest, is not particularly good and it's extremely expensive. Some people are spending more than 50% of their monthly income on just on transport. And finally, very few of these types of people in this demographic have PCs and internet at home. And as a result, they simply don't know what opportunities are available to them. Their issue is access and visibility. And so what we've done with Giraffe is really use the ubiquity of the cell phone as a tool to empower job seekers with more access and more visibility to opportunities by enabling them to make a CV on their cell phone using our Giraffe Mobi site, right? And on the other side of the equation for employers, to enable them with tools and algorithmics and so on and so forth to rapidly be able to identify, source, screen, and recruit people who are relevant to their businesses. And so by really tackling this problem of access, which is a major problem, but it's not the biggest problem.
But it's the network problem that Label was talking about.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, if you think about the beauty of technology and the beauty of the internet, it is ethereal, it is ubiquitous. So you can be sitting in Tembisa at home with no airtime, and you can make your CV on Giraffe's app, and 24 hours later, you can get a CV, you can get an SMS saying, are you available to come for an interview at this call center?
Important point that, with no airtime, because it's zero rated as a service. You've partnered with some of the carriers, I believe. I think there should be zero rated on all the networks. But just to move along here and back to some of the structural barriers that really look very difficult to overcome. Tash, and National Treasury released a report a while ago that showed the majority of the working class spend 40 minutes or more on the road to work. They live in 40-meter square houses and spend more than 40% of their disposable income on transport. Back to Anisha's earlier point there. So it does indicate that the majority of working people don't have enough time or capacity to even aid their own children's development in a substantive manner. So we've got a lot of young people inheriting the various challenges before they could even change their own circumstances. And I think often when we talk about privilege, perhaps that's really what we mean here. How do we fix that?
Leba had talked about networks. There's also role modeling. And you can see the social tension or social fabric disintegrating around young people who, yes, they say 60% of South African boys grow up without father figures. And so you'll have a working mom who has to leave at the crack of dawn, comes home extremely late. And so kids are left for a large part of the day. Where are your role models? Where are the people that are there to nurture and instill a set of values in you? So you know, there's this sort of I'm left alone for a long time in the day. And B, what we know is the socioeconomic circumstances of your parents are one of the biggest determinants of your ability to make it in a career. Now, Anisha had said something about, yes and Harambe on the supply side. And I'd like to maybe sort of clarify that. We really don't see Yes's role as being on the supply side. We have Harambe. We have, you know, other agencies that do incredible work finding young people, skilling them with work readiness, understanding what their strengths are. What we're seeing is one of the biggest issues in the ecosystem is the lack of jobs.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that. There simply are not enough jobs, and not enough jobs in the right places, and the right places being where the people are. So if 60% of South Africa's unemployed are living in townships, we should be creating more jobs closer to where people live. This idea of township revitalization and building economic strength and activity and keeping money circulating within those communities starts to become more and more important. Finding value chains to develop in more rural and peri-urban areas around agriculture, around tourism, those become the important jobs. And this is where, with Yes, you know, we're a collaborative platform. I think it is a powerful vehicle. It's a national platform. This is the first time we've seen government, business, labor, all willing to work together on a common platform towards the same goal and objective. Mm. And the idea of the goal being employment creation means that you've got to get a lot of other things right. Employment is not just employment. Employment is building SMEs. We can't create employment opportunities without building SMEs.
And one of the key challenges there in the township setting is the fact that a lot of the land there hasn't been zoned for commercial use. And we've been discussing this on the program in the recent past, how really we need municipal laws to change to accommodate this conversion to a much more dense commercial use situation in the township. So that's just one sliver or area of this entire ecosystem that needs to change if we're to see a revitalization in township economies. Through the YES program, you've also proposed a particular percentage of payroll that needs to be paid as a bursary. I know the DTI has come out and almost doubled that figure. There's a 60-day consultation period. Just give us the background to that situation and what's going on there.
So the Youth Employment Service emanated from the CEO initiative, which was when government and business discussed driving youth employment as a national hairy issue that really had to be tackled, particularly with ratings agencies looking at unemployment numbers and youth unemployment numbers as a big variable. So government said we will do 50% of the cost of these jobs annually and business will absorb the other half of this cost. We're looking at $16.5 billion for about 330,000 jobs a year. So government's give into this equation was the employment tax incentive, which allows you 1,000 rand back on paying a person under 6,000 rand a month. This is claimable. The second piece was to work with a particular government department to find the rest of the money, which was about 4.5 billion. And so one of the departments that gave us a very constructive conversation was the DTI. So it's not a cash transfer, but BE level has economic value. And so the DTI has published a draft gazette, which is now out for public comment, which says that if a company invests close to 1.5% of net profit after tax into creating employment opportunities, and those don't need to be in the company. They can be in SMEs, they can be in NGOs, they can be in locations distant from where the company is, precisely because we mentioned earlier that many companies don't grow with headcount. So they simply wouldn't have the infrastructure to hold entry-level jobs, and that's where the unemployment problem is. And so the draft gazette creates the conditions for companies who would like to move a level up on the scorecard. There are certain qualification criteria, but by making that investment in jobs, we'll be able to move up. And so it is it's a joint investment from business and government and of course, labor that have been very cooperative in this process.
And obviously, therefore, using the other policy lever, as you mentioned, in BEE of enterprise and supplier development, there are 40 points on the table there. If you're then investing in an enterprise or one of your own suppliers, you could then tap into the YES initiative as well, which now you're starting to get policy speaking to each other and you're actually starting to close some of the loops, which is why I see such excitement around the program as Stephen and even Luc Olivier of Unilever were saying to me earlier on the show. Lebo, when you look at this, though, there are still other barriers that I'd like to get to. That still exist, and these sometimes boil down to access based on gender and on once again on socioeconomic status. You've done some drilling down into the quarterly labour force numbers. What does it reveal in terms of other softer barriers that we're seeing in the ecosystem?
There's education, which is a big barrier, geography and transport networks. But I think that there is this other issue. It is maybe also a bit related to networks, and that really is around like just knowing my way around, like having enough information to go out there, and job seekers' costs, which are really, really high. So when we think about, I think UJ did a study which we partnered with them on, which revealed that work seekers' costs on a monthly basis, an average around like 600 rands or slightly more. And if you come from a household that is surviving on social grants, that is very expensive. So I think thinking about like different ways that we can try and reduce costs of work seeking is really important. And that is transport, that is data, internet costs. That talks to just even, how employers are trying to reach and connect to young people. And, we specifically deal with young people who are excluded from the formal economy. I think that other barriers are around, just how the journey is managed for young people. So we're learning that, the transition from earning or from schooling, from learning and schooling to earning is not a straight one. So it's quite dynamic, and the journey is quite a zigzag one. So, someone comes in, they get an opportunity for 3 months, How do we ensure that that adds up for the next opportunity that they have? So I think what's happening is a lot of little bits and pieces of experiences that young people are going through that is not adding up. So we're thinking very hard about how do you manage young people's journeys and ensure that their experiences are adding up and are setting them up for their next opportunity. So I think that what we see a lot in the labor market is that young people are coming in and out and out. And if we can start to understand a little bit better about what experiences are meaningful and add up and end you up in a journey of work, I think that would really be that would be a breakthrough. So I think that the all these types of barriers that we've been looking at, and it is all around education, geography, and networks. But like thinking a bit harder about what that actually means.
But also technology, once again, to your earlier point, Anish, provides a great way of breaking through a lot of these barriers. What I can see as a particular challenge, obviously, is getting the word out there to young people in Bishu, in wherever they're located, that Giraffe is out there and available to them. I mean, how are you approaching just marketing the fact that Giraffe is out there and free to use for work seekers at a zero-rated cost?
So this is a very good question. Thankfully, we have a lot of digital tools at our disposal to try and get the word out. I think it's interesting. A lot of people ask me, how do you get job seekers onto Giraffe? Well, I mean, it's not that difficult, actually, because people are so desperate for jobs that they'll resort to any way. And if you make it free and available to use on any cell phone, then you know it's really already reducing the barriers to adoption. But one of the best ways is by getting people jobs. The more interviews we get people, the more jobs we place, then the more people tell their friends and their networks and so on and so forth about us. And recently we got quite a large financial services organization to start using us, and they have more than 1,000 vacancies today nationwide, and they're hiring nationwide. And it's not true that there are plenty of, it's not true that there are no jobs out there. There are tons of jobs out there for which the right person has not yet been found. And we're not talking about rocket science or actuarial science. We're talking about, you know, call center agents and insurance salespeople. And you know, the cool thing about what we have at Giraffe is access to data of where the demand actually is, where in terms of geography and where in terms of industry. And we found very interesting patterns of demand where there are industries that are actually quite large and growing and healthy and for which there's huge demand, but not sufficient supply, which is perverse, isn't it, given the discussion we've just had. So I think that really understanding where the demand is, and being able to match it to the right supply, even if that means getting people to relocate, is something that you can use technology to do.
Are you currently talking to the people over at Yes and Harambee and trying to share some of this data so that we can work and collaborate together? Because often what we find in all of these efforts, it's fragmented, and that's why perhaps we're not moving the needle.
I think one of the cool things that both Yes and Harambee have done over the last 12 to 18 months is really drive an ecosystem push and proactively got everyone involved in these discussions. It's no longer a I'm just doing this on my own type thing. I think that the efforts of Yes and Harambee have been very laudable, organizing forums at which they've invited both NGOs, private sector and public sector. And I think there is starting to become a lot more coordination and partnership in really moving the dial on these issues.
Tashmir, as we end off this discussion, I was chatting to Elijah from the Department of Basic Education the other day about this third stream model that's being introduced into the basic education system. It's been piloted over the course of last year. And it's really there to send children into an alternative vocational stream, so to speak, a model that seems quite similar to the Hauptschule that we see in Germany or some other European models. What do you make of this move by the DBE? It has come in for some criticism. I think Equal Education came out and said perhaps we might be setting those young people up for failure if certain manufacturing sectors don't grow as much as we'd like them to, according to the IPAF policy. And we have seen manufacturing decline. But overall, what do you make of that approach?
I love the approach. I think that we have too much of a focus in South African society on university as this holy grail, that everybody should strive towards. There are a large number of people, and as we immerse ourselves in the research, we're starting to understand how poorly, children who are forced into thinking according to very rigid academic streams, how poorly they perform in those streams, and yet they may be sitting with incredible capability in other areas. Now, the German and the Swiss system that you are referring to allow young people into artisanal vocational streams to apprenticeships quite early. They apply and understand what the jobs market is like from a very young age. You know, they actually have to apply for their apprenticeships and earn a position in those hairdressers or chocolate makers, whatever it might be. And there are a huge number of jobs. So our imagination seems to be limited to these jobs in manufacturing. They're actually across the economy. There are a huge number of service jobs in hospitality and tourism that could open. There are apprenticeships in business administration. So, you know, it's not necessarily a sort of blue overall spanner type work.
Yeah.
And sort of opening our mindset to the fact that a person can have a very solid career and successful career in one of those sort of vocational artisanal type spaces is a mindset shift. We need to make working with your hands sexy again. We need to make these jobs aspirational again. So there's a big piece around yes, which is shifting behavior, shifting an understanding of what a good job is, where a job happens, and also how capitalism runs. I think, you know, Anish is incredibly creative in making the algorithms work and the efficiencies around where jobs already exist. And we need his system to work 100% that anywhere there's a job, the right person is being found to fill it. But there also needs to be a lot of creativity in the way business interacts with society. And that's where we're spending a lot of time. Can we reimagine the business model that it becomes more inclusive? For example, our discussions with MTN, the 1,000 youth that are going to be the MTN target are actually going to be part of MTN's network on their payroll, embedded in communities, taking the brand directly to where their market is and having this conduit relationship based at the community level. The Unilever model is around these coaches in Siyazakela that are being paid by Unilever to drive relationships around their product, to drive business literacy in communities. And so those sorts of inclusive models and creativity and innovation around new job types, digital gig economy type jobs, bite-sized, that's where a lot of the work needs to happen from a yes perspective. But we need the ecosystem. We need Harambee to do what they do really well. We need a giraffe to do what it does really well. And we've always got to find the space where some more innovation has to happen.
Well, I can certainly say from my perspective that the CEOs I chat to have this particular issue front and center of their board agenda at the moment. And I think that in itself is a massive achievement and a great base and foundation from which we can build. Just lastly, for listeners out there who want to get involved in the Yes movement, how do they do it?
There's a website, yesforyouth.co.za, with the number 4, the way young people write. There are buttons that lead you through a process depending on where you're coming from. If you're a training provider, an SMME that wants to be on our database to be able to accept youth placements that will be on big company payrolls, if you're a young person or if you're a big company. So we will stream you according to those. And you don't need to do yes purely from a BE standpoint. I think that's important, a message to get out there. We're saying to every doctor, lawyer, accountant, hairdresser, massage therapist, if you can take a young person on, it doesn't matter if it's one or the Standard Bank, 4,000, give a young person a chance, allow them in, set your expectations, but give them a chance. One at a time is how we'll get there.
And as the president said in his State of the Nation address, send me. I think more and more companies, small, medium, large, are saying, send me. How can we be part of the solution after a decade of perhaps the darker side of South African society on display? It's time for that new dawn. Tashmir Ismail, CEO of Yes, thank you very much for sharing the insights into the work that you're doing, along with Lebo and Care Executive at Harambee, and Anish Shivdasani, the CEO of Giraffe.
Michael Avery with Classic Business. on Classic 1027.
And coming up tomorrow morning on Classic Business Breakfast with MoneyWeb, looks like another interesting show. Professor Jonathan Janssen is in studio. He's been questioning the number of professorships people seem to be getting. There's an investment company as well that'll be looking at how to invest in funds that are backed by agricultural assets. And then Arabile and Nastasia will be asking whether or not the Small Business Development Department has actually done anything to help SMEs. So that's coming up on Classic Business Breakfast with MoneyWeb from 7 to 8. Well, that's all for tonight. Carolyn Stain up next, and she's certainly winning a whole host of new fans with Classic Cocktail Hour. Fantastic listening and a great way to ease into your weekday evenings. Thank you for listening to Classic Business with me, Michael Avery. Stay tuned to Classic 1027.